Wolford had been so angry when he drove away, Luke wouldn't have been surprised if problems started cropping up right away. But several days passed with no sign of the carpetbagger or his hired guns. Linus Peabody reported the Harkness family on the neighboring farm had packed up and moved away, abandoning the place because they couldn't pay the exorbitant taxes being demanded by the Reconstruction government. Another worried neighbor had come by the farm and told Peabody about it, adding that the sheriff was going to auction off the Harkness farm in Dobieville on Saturday. Luke knew Vincent Wolford would win that auction at a rock-bottom price, and he would probably get some of the money back from the sheriff and the judge in the form of a kickback. The idea of Emily going out to work in the fields with her grandfather worried Luke. If Wolford's gunny showed up, intent on causing trouble, Peabody wouldn't be able to protect her. In his current condition, Luke couldn't watch over them, so he made up his mind the best thing for him to do was to improve as much and as quickly as he could. With that determination goading him on, he worked with his legs for long hours each day while Emily and her grandfather were gone. He put more and more weight on his own muscles, forcing them to move and carry him, not just support him. Back and forth across the cabin's main room, he shuffled endlessly, using the crutches. Eventually, he was able to take a step, then several steps, without touching the floor with his crutches, although he held them ready to catch himself if he fell. Those efforts made his legs ache almost intolerably, but he welcomed the pain, even embraced it. To have his legs hurt was so much better than to have them feel nothing at all. By the time a week had passed since Wolford and his gunmen had shown up at the farm, Luke was able to take actual steps as he walked across the room, no longer sliding his feet in a shuffling manner. He left the crutches behind and walked on his own, something that had seemed utterly impossible a few months ago. His gait was slow and halting, to be sure, and he told himself with a wry smile that he was a long way from being able to dance a jig, but he was getting there. Still, he sometimes had to bite his lip to keep from crying out when Emily massaged his legs.
These muscles are definitely harder and stronger than they were. You're gonna walk again one of these days, Luke. You just wait and see.
Thanks to you, I am.
Without the way she had kept him going through his darkest days and nights, and without the determination his fear for her safety gave him, he might not have ever walked again. Soon he was gonna be ready to reveal his secret to her. A little later, Peabody caught a moment alone with him.
I spotted them fellas who work for Wolford watching the place again today.
Luke hated to hear that, but he wasn't surprised. He had known better than to hope Wolford would give up on getting his hands on the farm. Even worse was knowing the man wanted to get his hands on Emily. He had hinted as much when he visited the farm, and Luke had seen the unmistakable lust in the carpetbagger's eyes when Wolford looked at her.
Why don't I start going out to the fields with you and Emily during the day?
On your crutches?
No, you can help me climb into the wagon and I'll sit up there and keep an eye on things while you're working. We can take along the rifle and my revolver. I can handle a gun just fine.
Yeah, that ain't a bad idea.
The next day, they put it into practice, even though Emily was insistent on knowing why Luke was coming with them. Luke scanned the surrounding countryside for any sign of Wolford's men without spotting them.
Ooh!
Luke twisted around on the seat to peer toward the cabin. The shots continued from that direction as Emily and Peabody dropped what they were doing and ran to the wagon. Peabody scrambled up to the seat and jerked the reins loose from the brake lever while Emily practically threw herself into the back. Even the normally stubborn mules sensed something was wrong. They broke into a run as Peabody headed them toward the cabin. Breathing hard, Emily leaned over the back of the seat between the two men.
What are they doing? What's all that shooting about?
We'll know in a minute.
Luke gripped the rifle tightly. It was only a single-shot weapon, but the revolver in his pocket was fully loaded. The shooting stopped before they came in sight of the cabin. As they did, Luke caught a glimpse of several riders galloping away from the place. They were already too far off for him to make out any details, but he was willing to bet they were the three hired guns who worked for Vincent Wolford.
No!
Limp, bloody bundles of feathers were scattered around in the yard. The chickens had been blasted to pieces. In the pen over by the barn, the hogs lay motionless in the mud. Emily leaped out of the wagon and ran into the barn. When she came back a moment later, tears were running down her cheeks.
about to. Looks like they just shot everything that moved.
Why in the blazes did they do that? It aggravates the hell out of me, but losing those animals ain't enough to ruin the farm.
This is just the opening gambit. Think of it as a warning. Wolford wants to let you know it'll get a lot worse if you don't give him what he wants.
Never. I'm going to town to swear out a complaint against the varmints. The sheriff's got to do something. He's supposed to uphold the law around here.
The sheriff works for Wolford and that judge of his, and the rest of the Yankees. He's not going to do anything, Grandpa.
We don't know that. If nobody ever speaks up, nothing will change around here.
The old-timer was right about that, Luke supposed. But like Emily, he didn't think complaining to the law would do any good. They would never know if they didn't try, though.
We'll all go to Dobyville. Maybe round up some of your friends and neighbors who've had trouble with the carpetbaggers and take them with you. If more people are speaking up, the men in charge will have a harder time ignoring them.
That's a good idea.
Not as good an idea as going to town and shooting that snake Wolford for telling his men to do this.
It might come to that, Luke thought. But we have to try reason first, then bullets. Peabody spent the rest of the day visiting his neighbors and putting together a delegation to complain to the sheriff in Dobyville. The killing of his livestock wasn't the first such outrage in the area. Barns had mysteriously burned down, crops had been trampled on dark nights, wells had been fouled, and cattle had been run off. Nor would that harassment stop, Luke thought. In fact, he expected it to escalate into outright violence in fairly short order. Wolford and the other carpetbaggers were not patient men. The farmers gathered outside town and rode in on mules and in wagons and buggies. Some of them walked. A few had brought their wives and children with them, something Luke thought probably wasn't wise. A group about 40 strong converged on the sheriff's office. Their arrival in town stirred up enough of a commotion the lawman heard them coming. He stepped out onto the porch of his office to wait for them. He was a middle-aged man with thinning brown hair and a mustache. A gun belt was strapped around his waist, and he carried a shotgun in addition to the holstered revolver.
Fella's name is Royce Wilkes. Used to be a deputy here, but he was too fond of corn liquor. The old sheriff ran him off. When the war was over, the Yankees put him back in office and gave him the sheriff's job. He's local, but he's in the back pocket of them no-good carpetbaggers.
All right! Now what the devil's going on here?
Everyone in the group turned to look at Linus Peabody. He had talked them into coming, and they regarded him as their spokesman.
Sheriff, we're all here to lodge complaints against Vincent Wolford and those fellas who work for him. I beg pardon to the ladies in earshot of my voice, but Wolford's men have been raising hell hereabouts, and it's got to stop.
You know for a fact that what you're saying is true, Linus?
I do. They came out to my place yesterday and shot all my chickens and hogs and my milk cow. We seen them riding off after they done it.
Luke and Emily nodded. In reality, the riders had been too far away for a positive identification, but there was no question in Luke's mind that Wolford's men were responsible.
Well, that's a mighty serious charge.
That ain't all they done. My barn burned down last week, and I know good and well somebody set that fire. I rode into town and told you all about it, Royce.
You did, but you also told me you didn't see who done it.
It had to be Wolford's men. You know that.
I'm a lawman, and I've got to have proof. And somebody thinking they saw something ain't proof.
Are you calling us liars?
I'm saying maybe you were mistaken.
Why don't you at least ask Wolford about it? See if he can account for the whereabouts of his men yesterday when Mr. Peabody's livestock was being slaughtered.
Well, I ain't gonna bother an important man like Mr. Wolford.
It's no bother.
Everyone swung around to look. The crowd parted, and Vincent Wolford himself sauntered up to the porch.
I heard there was a gathering of some sort and decided to come see for myself what it was about. I'd be glad to answer any questions you have for me, Sheriff.
I don't have any questions.
I do. Did you send your men to kill my livestock, mister?
Of course not, Mr. Peabody. Why in the world would I do a thing like that?
To run me off so you can grab my land!
I wanted to make you a fair offer for your land, but you wouldn't even consider it. As far as I'm concerned, our business is over.
Where were your men yesterday morning?
Burnett, Howell, and Prentice? I'm not sure. I don't keep track of their whereabouts every hour of the day. As long as they do the jobs I give them, that's all I really care about.
Did you give them any jobs yesterday?
As a matter of fact, I didn't. I didn't even speak to them. So you see, even if there was anything to these ludicrous accusations, and I assure you there isn't, I can't be held responsible for them.
Looks like that clears it all up. I'm sorry to bother you, Mr. Wolford.
Oh, it's no bother, Sheriff, I assure you. All I want to do is carry on my business and get along with my neighbors.
Wilkes turned back to the farmers.
You've said your piece. Now it's time for all of you to go back home and stop bothering folks.
Are you running us out of town? Don't we still have a right to go where we please?
No, you don't. Gathering up in mobs like this is against the law, so if you don't break it up and leave, it'll be my duty to arrest you. And I'll get the soldiers to help me if I need to.
You better do what he says, Linus.
You mean let them get away with it?
Getting arrested isn't gonna help anything.
All right, we'll go. But this ain't over, Sheriff. We'll get justice somehow.
You step out of line, and you'll be sorry.
Seeing that they couldn't do any more, the crowd turned to leave town.
Like I told you, nothing's gonna change.
At least Wolford knows we're on to him. He's the one who's really to blame for everything.
And all he's gonna do is laugh at us.
If that's all that happened, Luke thought, then they might be lucky. Wolford's smooth facade had never budged, but he had to be angry that the farmers had banded together to complain about his tactics. Luke wouldn't be at all surprised if he decided to teach them a lesson. And if he did, it would be a painful one. Luke was sure of that. Emily was cool toward Luke on the ride back to the farm and for the rest of the day. He wasn't sure why she was upset with him, unless it was because he had talked her grandfather out of setting off a showdown in town. Maybe she didn't understand he didn't want anything to happen to her. Or maybe she did, and that just made her angrier. Whatever the reason, she didn't have much to say to him around her grandfather, and they didn't get a chance to talk alone. Luke turned in, knowing nothing was settled, and the situation was likely to get worse before it got better, if it ever did. Sometime during the night, he came awake instantly, smelling smoke. It was too strong to be coming from the fireplace or the stove. He sat up. No lights burned inside the cabin, but a flickering red glow came through the cracks around the front door and through the thin curtains hung over the windows. The barn was on fire. It was the only explanation that made sense.
Emily? Linus, wake up!
Emily and Peabody bolted awake.
The barn's on fire!
Oh, no!
With his nightshirt flapping around his legs, Peabody grabbed the rifle from the chair where he had placed it to be handy and headed for the door. When he flung it open, the garish red light from the blazing barn spilled into the cabin. He rushed outside with Emily right behind him. Still struggling to get out of his bunk, Luke swung his legs to the floor and stood up, using the back of a nearby chair for support. He picked up his revolver off the chair and grabbed one of his crutches propped against the wall next to the head of his bunk.
No. No!
Luke hurried toward the door as fast as he could. He knew without having to think about it what had happened. To get back at Peabody for trying to organize the farmers against him, Wolford had sent his men to the farm to set fire to the barn. And those killers were still out there, where they threatened Emily and her grandfather. That made Luke's blood run cold.
Grandpa!
In the garish light of the fire, Luke saw a man on horseback nearly run down Linus Peabody. The old-timer threw himself out of the way just in time, losing his balance and sprawling on the ground. The rider wheeled his horse around and pointed a gun at Peabody as Emily ran toward her grandfather. She leaped to shield him as the rider pulled the trigger. Luke fired at the same instant. The impact of the bullet jarred the man on the horse, knocking him forward.
Emily! Oh my God! Emily!
Luke suddenly realized he was off the porch and didn't think about what he did next as he cast the single crutch aside and broke into a stumbling run toward Emily and Peabody. The nightmarish glare of the fire revealed Emily's body lying stretched on the ground while her grandfather hovered over her. Suddenly, two more riders lunged out of the jagged shadows cast by the firelight. The newcomers seemed intent on trampling them. Still stumbling, Luke raised the revolver. He didn't know if he hit either of the attackers, but they veered sharply away.
I'm hit! We gotta get out of here!
Luke recognized the voice of the tough named Joe Burnett. The other two had to be Howell and Prentice. One of them grabbed the dangling reins of Burnett's horse, and all three gunmen fled. Pain flared through Luke's legs, but they continued to support him. Peabody looked up at him as he reached the old man's side, but he didn't seem to notice Luke was standing and moving around without the aid of the crutches.
Emily's hurt. When that no good shot at me, she got in the way of the bullet.
How bad is it? Where's she hit?
The old timer looked down, gently grasped Emily's shoulders, and rolled her onto her back. Luke caught a glimpse of blood on her nightclothes, but the stain appeared to be a small one, at least so far.
I don't think she's hurt too bad. Looks like the bullet just nicked her side.
Oh.
She's coming too.
Luke watched and listened for any sign of the gunman doubling back. In the firelight, the three of them made good targets. Not seeing further danger, he turned his attention back to Emily and Peabody.
You'll need to pick her up and get her back in the cabin. Can you clean that wound and put a dressing on it?
Yeah, I reckon I can. Luke, you're standing up on your own. And you ran across there a minute ago. I saw you with my own eyes.
Don't think about that. Just take care of Emily.
I will. What are you going to do?
Something that somebody should have done before now.
Luke didn't know how long his legs would keep working. It had taken the threat to Emily and her grandfather for them to move like they had a few minutes earlier. The mixture of fear, desperation, and rage had burned through him like the fire that was consuming the barn. A cleansing fire that forced muscles and nerves to work again the way they were supposed to. His movements were rusty and a little clumsy, but he could get around again and didn't want to waste the opportunity. Peabody was still strong, and Emily was a slip of a girl. He had no trouble picking her up and carrying her back into the cabin. Luke followed. While Peabody tended to Emily, he got dressed, reloaded the Griswold and Gunnison, and went back outside. His face was impassive in the firelight, despite the pain shooting through his legs with every step. The rest of those nerves were waking up again after their long sleep, he thought. If they kept working for a while longer, it would be enough. He pocketed his revolver and walked over to the spot where he had wounded Joe Burnett. The man's revolver, a Colt Navy, lay on the ground where Burnett had dropped it. Luke picked up the gun, hefting it in his hand, and realized his ammunition would fit it. Both weapons would be fully loaded when he headed for town. He frowned. How was he going to get there? The luckless mules had been in the barn, and so had the wagon. His legs were finally working again, but he couldn't walk all the way to Dobieville. Hoofbeats made him swing around and raise both guns. The man riding up to the farm reined in sharply and threw his hands in the air.
Whoa! Hold your fire, mister! I'm a friend!
Luke recognized the newcomer as one of the men who had gone into town with them that morning.
You're Thad Franklin, right?
Yeah. My place a couple miles east of here. I saw the light from the fire and knew something had to be wrong. Thought I'd better come see if I could help. It's too late to save that barn, you know.
Maybe you and the others can help Linus rebuild.
Is he hurt? How about Emily?
They're in the cabin. Emily was wounded by the varmints who set the barn on fire, but I think she's going to be all right.
Well, there'll be more folks showing up soon, I reckon. People always come to help when they see a fire.
You can help right now. Give me your horse.
My horse? What? Say, you're the fellow who can't walk. But you're standing up now.
Luke lifted the Colt Navy and pointed it at Franklin.
I need your horse. I'll get it back to you if I can. If I can't, you'll find it in Dobieville.
Careful with that gun, mister. What are you going to do? You going after the men who did this?
Luke used his free hand to take the reins out of Franklin's fingers.
Sorry, but it's got to be done.
He got his left foot in the stirrup and swung up into the saddle, clenching his jaw at the pain caused by mounting.
Well, you're crazy. You can't fight those carpetbaggers. There are too many of them, and they got the Yankee army on their side.
I don't plan to fight all of them. Just one in particular and the men he sent to do this.
They'll kill you.
Probably. But I plan on sending them to hell ahead of me.
Yeah.
Still burning brightly, the fire cast an orange glow into the sky behind Luke as he rode toward Dobieville. Being on a horse again felt good. Despite his concern for Emily, he felt more alive than he had in a long time. He didn't need to reload the Navy after all. Checking the gun cylinder, he found that Burnett had fired only one round. The other five chambers were loaded. He had 11 shots. It would have to be enough. Regret gnawed at him. He hadn't taken the time to say goodbye to Emily and her grandfather, but he knew they would have tried to talk him out of forcing a showdown with Wolford. Emily might have succeeded in convincing him, and that wouldn't do. The Raiders had come very close to killing Emily, and that knowledge filled Luke with a rage overpowering every other emotion. Somebody had to take a stand against their evil. He was that man, simple as that. Luke had a good sense of direction and was able to find the settlement without any trouble. When he saw its lights, he reined in for a moment, thinking of the situation and what he should do next. The three gunmen weren't that far ahead of him. He figured the first thing they would do was report to Wolford, so there was a good chance he could find them together. It would certainly make things easier if all four of his enemies were in one place. That notion turned his thoughts to Potter, Stratton, Richards, and Casey. He'd had four enemies to deal with that fateful night, too, and it hadn't turned out well. But he'd been taken by surprise, even though he shouldn't have been, and tonight he'd be the one doing the surprising. He shook his head and turned his thoughts back to the situation at hand. Wolford owned the North Georgia Land Company. Luke had heard talk about it and had seen the sign on a building in town earlier when the group of farmers came to talk to the sheriff. It was the first place he would look for his quarry. Dobieville was quiet. The citizens didn't know what had happened out at the Peabody farm. They would hear about it by morning. As he rode down the deserted streets, they were blissfully ignorant. That was about to change. The saloons were open and a light still burned in the general store, but most of the businesses along Main Street were dark, including the building that housed Wolford's office. It appeared to be locked up for the night. A faint glow in the alley behind the place told a different story. Luke looked along the side of the building, saw that glow, and knew one of the windows in the rear was lit up. He dismounted, and his legs sagged for a second, forcing him to grab the saddle horn and hold himself up. He straightened and looped the reins around the hitch rack in front. Hoping his muscles wouldn't betray him at the worst possible moment, he drew both revolvers from his pockets and started down the narrow passage beside the building. Reaching the rear corner of the building, he edged around it carefully and saw the lighted window. It was raised a few inches to let in the night air. As quietly as possible, he moved closer to hear what was being said inside.
I need the doctor! This bullet's got to come out of me!
If we fetch the doctor, there'll be questions about how you managed to get shot. I'd rather not deal with the potential embarrassment.
What? You said you're gonna let me die?
Of course not. Harv can dig the bullet out, can't you, Harv?
I reckon I could give it a try.
And I have a bottle of whiskey right here. Take a nice healthy slug and then Harv can clean the wound with it too.
I don't know about this.
You're being well paid to take risks, Joe. And you didn't even manage to kill the old man like I told you to.
That's not my fault. I told you, boss. The girl jumped right in front of my gun just as I pulled the trigger.
Yes, well, if she's dead, that's going to be very regrettable. For her and for you. I mean to have her. Along with her grandfather's farm.
Luke's hands tightened on the guns, wanting to burst in there and start shooting. But it wasn't quite the right moment yet. He needed to wait just a little longer.
Here, drink. Now lay down on my desk. Thurman, hold him down while Harv removes that bullet.
Yeah, sure.
Yes, sir, Mr. Wolfer.
Luke waited as he listened to them moving around.
Ah! Damn it, boss! At least give me something to bite down on!
Oh, all right.
Now... While they were all gathered around the desk with their attention focused on the crude surgery, he took a couple of steps and rammed his shoulder against the building's back door. He stumbled over the threshold, catching his balance as he brought up the guns in his hands.
Hold it! Nobody move!
Naturally, they ignored the command. One of the gunmen whirled away from the desk and tried to claw out the gun holstered on his hip. Luke shot him in the face. The second gunman cleared leather, but before he could raise his gun, let alone get off a shot, a slug from the Colt Navy in Luke's left hand ripped into his throat. Burnett suddenly stood with a Colt in his hand. Luke fired both guns into Burnett's chest. Luke felt something lance into his left shoulder. It wasn't much worse than a bee sting, but he knew he'd just been shot. He knew as well Wolford had shot him, because the other three men in the room were already dead. Wolford darted for the door leading into the front part of the building and fired again. Luke ducked, which gave the carpetbagger time to flee from the private office. As Luke straightened, he stomped into the bigger, darkened room after Wolford. Luke spotted the little tongue of flame from the muzzle, and he aimed his revolver in that direction. With Luke pursuing him inexorably, Wolford didn't have time to unlock the front door. He took the only way out, throwing himself against the front window. Glass sprayed as he burst through it and sprawled on the boardwalk outside. Luke kept moving. His legs hadn't betrayed him so far, and miraculously, he was still alive. But the job wasn't done yet. He stepped through the broken window onto the boardwalk as Wolford tried to scramble away.
Help!
Should have thought of that before you sent those men out to the Peabody Farm tonight.
You can't be doing this. You can't even walk.
Seems that I can, but you can't.
Wolford stopped crawling and clutched his bleeding, ruined knee. Luke aimed carefully and blasted apart Wolford's other knee.
Drop that gun! Drop it right now!
Luke glanced over and saw a hatless, nightshirt-wearing Sheriff Royce Wilkes pointing a shotgun at him. Luke lined the Griswold and Gunnison's barrel on Wolford's forehead and eared back the hammer. His thumb was all that kept it from falling.
You can blast me to hell, Sheriff, but you can't pull those triggers fast enough to keep me from killing Wolford.
Don't shoot him, Sheriff! Don't shoot him!
Wilkes held off, but the slight tremor of the shotgun's twin barrel showed how much he wanted to pull the triggers.
Listen here, mister. You better put that gun down. Otherwise, you'll die here.
So will this murderer. And I think I'm just fine with it if that's what it takes to rid the world of him.
I never murdered anybody. Oh, God, somebody help me!
You're beyond help from God or anybody else. And you paid those gunmen of yours to go out to the Peabody Farm, burn down the barn, and murder Linus Peabody. I heard you say that yourself just a few minutes ago.
Why would I...
Because with her grandfather dead, you thought Emily would have no choice but to sell to you. You thought I didn't represent any threat. You were wrong on both counts. Even if you killed Linus and me, Emily would have wound up cutting out your heart. Trust me on that, Wolford.
You're crazy.
Am I? Sheriff Wilkes, why don't you ask Mr. Wolford if he sent his men to kill Linus Peabody?
I don't want any part of this. I'm supposed to enforce the law.
Then arrest Vincent Wolford. Arrest him for murder and see to it he's tried, convicted, and hanged. And if you do that, then maybe, just maybe, there's still some hope for this country after all.
Mr. Wolford?
What does it matter? Of course I sent my men to get rid of that stubborn old geezer. He's just a rebel. We beat them. We won. We can do anything we want to them.
There's still supposed to be some law.
Not for rebels.
We're still Americans. Isn't that one of the so-called reasons you Yankees fought the war in the first place?
Wolford pushed himself up from the boardwalk with his left hand. His right flung up a little pistol.
Go to hell!
You first.
Luke lifted his thumb. The bullet smacked into Wolford's forehead. The gun fell out of his hand, unfired. Luke expected to feel a double load of buckshot smash into him, ending his life. Instead, he realized that other than the echoes of his shot dying away, the street was quiet. He looked over at Wilkes. The sheriff had lowered the shotgun. Maybe it had something to do with the crowd of townspeople surrounding him. They had been drawn by the shots and the screaming, and probably had heard Wolford's confession. It was possible a lot of them didn't like the way Wilkes had been doing the Yankees' bidding. He had to be worried the crowd would turn on him if he shot Luke.
The soldiers will be coming from their camp.
When they get here, you can tell them some criminals have been executed.
There was no trial.
More than they deserved. Wolford got to speak his piece. All these people heard it.
There's going to be warrants sworn out on you.
Fine.
Luke tucked the Colt Navy away, but kept the Griswold and Gunnison in his hand as he stepped down carefully from the boardwalk. The horse he had ridden into town was only a few steps away. It looked like he wasn't going to be able to return the mount to Thad Franklin after all. If he could, later on he would send some money to the man to pay for the horse.
I thought you couldn't walk.
It seems that I can.
Old Peabody and his granddaughter?
They're all right. Emily was wounded, but I don't think it's bad.
Dead Wolford's men didn't murder anybody after all.
Not for lack of trying. And there's no telling what other crimes they're guilty of or how many men they killed.
You're the killer! A cold-blooded killer!
In that case, Sheriff, I think you'd do well to stay out of my way.
He put his foot in the stirrup and swung up onto the borrowed horse. Part of him couldn't believe he was still alive, or that his legs were still working. But that was the case, and he had learned to deal with things the way they were, not the way he wished they could be. Wilkes was right. The law would probably come after him. He could never go back to the Peabody farm. It would bring down more trouble on their heads, trouble they didn't need. One thing had to be left perfectly clear before he rode away.
Emily Peabody and her grandfather had nothing to do with what happened here tonight. I did it on my own, and the law has no reason to bother them for this or anything else. And I'm counting on the good people of this community to make sure that's understood. I did this.
We don't even know your name, mister.
It's Smith. Luke Smith.
With that, Luke jammed his heels into the horse's flanks. The darkness at the edge of town swallowed him. It swallowed Luke Smith because Luke Jensen was dead. He had died the night the Confederate gold was stolen. His ma and pa, Kirby and Janie, would never know he was a failure and a fugitive. ...1870. An icy wind clawed at Luke through the sheepskin coat he wore as he brought his horse to a stop in front of the squat roadhouse. Settlers' homes and most businesses on the almost treeless Kansas plains were built of sod because it was too expensive to have lumber freighted in. Any grass on the thatched roofs was dead. It was late autumn. He was glad he'd found the place perched on the bank of a narrow creek with ice forming along its edges. No other human habitation was in sight for miles around on the open plains. At least he'd have somewhere to spend the night out of the frigid weather. His legs sometimes gave him trouble when it was cold. Usually he got around just fine, as if he'd never been injured, although it had taken months to regain his full strength. The wound in his shoulder was minor and had healed quickly, but his legs had given him trouble for a long time. Every so often, the old ache was there, deep in his muscles, and it was worse when the temperature dropped. Other old aches bothered him more, like the knowledge that he had failed the Confederacy and his friends, and the fact that he had ridden away without saying goodbye to Emily. At least he knew she and her grandfather were all right. A few months after leaving Georgia, he'd been tending bar in a little East Texas town when none other than the former sheriff, Royce Wilkes, had walked into the saloon where Luke worked. Luke dismounted and tied his horse at the rack with half a dozen others. He glanced at the gray sky. Sleet or snow would probably fall later, but for now, there was just the cold wind and the fading light. He shuddered in the cold, remembering that long-ago meeting with Wilkes. As he came up to the bar, his eyes widened in shock as he recognized Luke.
Smith!
His hand dropped toward the gun on his hip. Luke reached under the bar and rested his hand on the stock of the sawed-off shotgun the owner kept on a shelf there.
I wouldn't do that, Sheriff. There's a greener pointing at you under here.
Wilkes moved his hand well away from his gun.
Sorry. And I ain't a sheriff no more. Haven't been since not long after you left Dobyville.
What happened?
Well, everybody in the damn county raised hell with Judge Blevins and Colonel Morrison about how Wolford tried to have Linus Peabody killed. That old man's well-liked around those parts. Morrison and the judge tried to brush it off. Blevins swore out a warrant for your arrest on murder charges. But I said I wasn't going to go after you, so they booted me from the job.
That's a shame. A man shouldn't lose his job for doing the right thing. For once.
Damn it, you don't know what it was like back there when the Yankees came in. Oh, I reckon maybe you do, since you were there. Anyway, the Yankees didn't want me anymore, and the townsfolk didn't have any use for me to start with. So I thought I might as well come out here to the frontier and see what I was missing. So far, it ain't been a hell of a lot.
Do you know how Emily is?
She was fine when I left. She wasn't hurt bad that night. In fact, she started letting Thad Franklin's boy Jess start courting her.
Luke was glad Emily wasn't sitting around and pining away. He wasn't worth her being unhappy.
What about those murder warrants?
Well, they're still in effect, I guess. But nobody's getting in any hurry to serve them. I reckon there's a good chance that if you stay out of Georgia, nobody's even gonna bother looking for you.
Luke hoped that was true. He had spent the first 3 months looking over his shoulder, even as he worked his way west, taking whatever odd jobs he could find.
I see you're still up and walking around.
Yeah, my legs are a lot better.
You're a lucky man. Oh, hey, how about a beer, huh?
Luke nodded and reached for a mug.
I can do that.
Wilkes had his drink and left. Luke was relieved, knowing Emily was all right. Maybe she would marry the Franklin boy and settle down to have a long, happy life. Yankees or no Yankees. It was still on Luke's mind when he left the saloon that night and started back to the shabby little room he rented a block away. The soft scrape of a footstep behind him was all the warning he had or needed. As he twisted, his hand streaked to the Colt Navy tucked in his waistband. The gun came out with blinding speed. The muzzle flash from the other man's gun bloomed in the darkness. Luke pulled the trigger. A man reeled from the mouth of the alley Luke had just passed, collapsing in the street. He knew, even before he snapped a Lucifer to life with his thumbnail, the man he'd killed was Royce Wilkes. He'd been nursing a grudge against Luke ever since leaving Georgia, and when fate had brought the two of them together again, the moment was inevitable.
What a damn shame.
Back in Dobieville, Wilkes had acted like a real lawman for a moment, but the former sheriff was responsible for bushwhacking him, so Luke wasn't going to lose any sleep over killing him. Nor was he going to stay around. He didn't need the attention or the trouble. Before anyone came to see what the shooting was about, he hustled to his room, rounded up what little gear he had, got his horse from the shed behind the boarding house, and lit a shuck, heading west again. In the years since, he had continued to drift, never staying in one place for too long. He had driven a freight wagon, worked as a shotgun guard on a stagecoach run, tended bar, and even worked as a clerk in a store more than once, although he hated that job. Sometimes he sat in on a poker game and usually came out ahead. He had made enough money to send some back to Thad Franklin for the horse, a mount he had traded in on a better one in San Antonio. He owned a decent saddle, a Winchester rifle, and a gun belt and holster in which he carried the Colt Navy. He kept the Griswold and Gunnison either in his saddlebags or tucked in his waistband. He picked up books whenever he could find them and spent most of his nights reading. It wasn't much of a life, but it was what he had. The vague idea of going to Denver had struck him, and the way he lived, he didn't spend much time thinking about what he was doing next. He just did it. So he'd set out across Kansas, not figuring on the late autumn storm that was sweeping down across the plains from Canada. He might have to hold up at the roadhouse for a while before continuing his endless journey. The first thing that struck him as he stepped inside the sod building was the silence. He'd expected some talk and raucous laughter from the patrons, maybe the clatter of coins tossed onto a table as somebody ended up in a poker game, or the clink of a whiskey bottle against a glass. Instead, once he swung the door closed behind him, he didn't hear anything. The low-ceilinged, windowless room was lit only by a couple of dim and flaring lamps, and the air was thick with smoke and shadows. Luke's eyes adjusted quickly to the gloom and took in the scene before him. A couple of young men who looked like they might be cowboys up from Texas sat at one of the crude, rough-hewn tables scattered around the hard-packed dirt floor. Another man in an overcoat with a flashy but well-worn suit underneath it sat alone at another table. Luke pegged him as a gambler. Three men in shaggy buffalo hide coats had a woman pinned up against the bar, which consisted of planks laid across several whiskey barrels. Long-haired and unshaven, they were about as shaggy as the buffalo that had provided their coats. They turned their heads to glare at Luke. A few feet away, on the other side of the bar, a skinny, bald-headed man just stood, looking nervous. The young cowboys looked a little scared, too. The gambler's face was impassive, but that didn't mean much. Tinhorns made their living by not letting their faces give anything away.
Don't mind me. I'm just looking for a place to get out of that blue northern that's blowing in.
One of the hard cases shrugged and started to turn away, and Luke thought that was the end of it.
I know you.
Luke hadn't gotten a good look at her. He'd seen enough soiled doves in his travels, taking what comfort he could from them when he had to. She tried to step out of the half-circle of men around her, and the lamplight hit her face, revealing the curly blonde hair, the face that was still pretty despite the hard lines settling in around the eyes and mouth, and the little dark beauty mark near the corner of that mouth. Luke tensed. He remembered her, too. It was hard for him to forget somebody who had pointed a shotgun at him. The most vivid memory was of her standing in the shallow creek in wet, skimpy undergarments, but it was followed closely by the mental image of her threatening him and his companions with that scattergun.
Tennessee. Maybe Georgia.
Before the woman could respond, one of the hard cases put a grimy hand on her chest and shoved her back against the bar.
Mind your own business, mister.
Oh, I intend to. But I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't treat the lady quite so rough, friend.
They're gonna do a lot worse than that. They're gonna kill us all once they're through having their fun. These are the Gammon brothers.
The name didn't mean anything to Luke.
Hey, Cooter, you think this fella could be that U.S. Marshal who's been on our trail?
I don't know, Ben, but it doesn't really matter anyway, does it?
As soon as the hard case said that, Luke knew the woman was right. The three of them planned to kill everybody and loot the place before they rode off. They'd probably keep the blonde alive the longest, figuring she could help keep them warm until the storm blew over. Luke didn't take his eyes off the outlaws, but he spoke to the cowboys.
You fellas from Texas taking a hand in this?
No, mister, all we got are rifles, and then they're outside on our horses.
We just came in for a drink. Now we just like to get out of here alive.
How about you, Ace?
The deck was stacked against me, until now.
Hell, fires, Cougar! They gonna draw on us!
Hit the floor now!
Luke palmed the Colt smoothly from its holster. At the same time, his left hand twisted at the wrist and grasped the butt of the Griswold and Gunnison. He wished the blonde wasn't standing right by the bar where a stray bullet could hit her, but all he could do was try to stay alive. The outlaws grabbed for their guns. They were fast, but Luke was faster. The gambler brought up his pistol, but the third outlaw had his gun already leveled. Luke pivoted and used the Griswold and Gunnison on the third brother. The third man was hit, but he still stood tall and straight. Luke felt the hot breath of the bullet as it whipped past his ear. Something flashed in the lamplight. The third Gammon brother dropped his gun and brought up both hands to his throat. Bright red blood flooded from his neck, which the blonde had opened almost from ear to ear with a single backhanded swipe of the straight razor she held in her hand. The man collapsed onto his knees and then pitched forward on his face to lie motionless as a crimson puddle formed on the dirt floor beneath his head. Cooter and Ben were both down. So was the gambler and so were the two cowboys, although they lifted frightened faces to look around as the shooting ended. Luke saw the proprietor peeking out from behind one of the whiskey barrels where he'd taken cover.
Why don't you step away from those men, ma'am, so I can make sure they're dead?
The one I cut is. You can count on that. Looks like just about all the blood he had in him has leaked out.
It never hurts to make sure.
Luke approached the fallen outlaws with both hands still filled with revolvers and towed them over onto their backs. In all three cases, sightless eyes stared up emptily at the low ceiling.
I told you.
One of the cowboys had gotten up to check on the gambler.
This fella's hurt bad.
Luke tucked away the Griswold and Gunnison, but kept the Colt in his other hand as he went over and knelt beside the gambler. The man's white shirt was dark with blood under his once fancy vest.
Sorry.
Don't be. I knew it was a game of chance when I took the cards. It's just the way they were.
His eyes went glassy.
That's right. It's just the way they were dealt.
He looked up at the blonde.
You know his name?
No. He just rode in a while ago, like the rest of you. Those cowboys were first, then him, then the Gammons, then you.
Luke stood up and reloaded the Navy.
Luke Smith.
I'm called Marcy.
Pleased to make your acquaintance. Again.
He noticed the razor she had used to cut the throat of the third Gammon brother was nowhere to be seen. She'd probably slipped it back into a hidden pocket in her dress.
I take it these are some of the local bad men?
They're bad, all right. They've robbed, raped, and murdered their way across half of Kansas and Nebraska.
Then the world's better off with them dead.
I reckon. The world really would have been better off if they'd been put in gunny sacks and drowned when they were babies.
A bit bloodthirsty, aren't you?
Men like that deserve it.
Luke turned to the Texas cowhands.
How about giving me a hand dragging them out?
As cold as it is, there's liable to be wolves around tonight. If you put the bodies outside...
Then these three will finally serve a purpose, won't they?
Luke looked at the gambler.
We'll put this feller in the shed where the wolves can't get at him. Maybe the ground won't be frozen too hard in the morning to dig a grave.
Mister, for what you did, your money ain't good for as long as you're here. Thank you.
Luke just nodded. Since his funds were running a little low, he didn't argue. A little later, Luke was enjoying the beer, the bowl of stew, and the chunk of hard bread the man brought to his table once the bodies of the dead men had been tended to. Marcy came over and sat down at the table with him, bringing a glass of whiskey with her.
What happened to those fellows who were with you the last time I saw you?
Four of them are dead. I don't know about the other four.
He'd kept his eyes and ears open while he was drifting, hoping he might run across something or somebody who could put him on the trail of Potter and the others. But so far, he hadn't had any luck. He had no idea where to start searching, so he asked questions about them and waited and hoped.
You haven't seen any of the others since then, have you?
You're the first one, Luke.
I appreciate you not shooting me that day.
Don't think I didn't think about it.
You're about as hard-boiled as a lady can be, aren't you?
Who the hell said I'm a lady? And do you know any other way for a woman to survive out here? We've got to be tougher than all you men. We just can't let you see it.
Luke grinned and lifted his beer.
To toughness.
To toughness.
What happened to the other women who were with you that day?
Damned if I know. Some of them are dead and the others are scattered. Just like your friends, I reckon.
The ones who are left alive aren't my friends.
It's like that, is it?
It is.
Well then, I don't know whether to hope you find them or not.
Why's that?
Because there's four of them, and only one of you. And I hate to see any man I let into my bed without paying get himself killed.
You gonna let me into your bed without paying?
Let me finish this drink first, and then we'll see.
Luke and Marcy spent the night in one of the small rooms partitioned off at the back of the roadhouse. Wrapped up in blankets and each other, they stayed warm enough despite the icy wind howling outside. When Luke woke up in the morning, she was gone, but he smelled coffee brewing and hoped he would find her in the main room. He sat up and dressed quickly. Pushing the curtain aside, he stepped out of the tiny room and saw Marcy standing at the stove fully dressed with a blanket wrapped around her shoulders. Even inside the roadhouse, it was cold. She looked up at him and smiled.
How do you feel?
Not bad.
As he walked over to her, his gait was a little awkward. His muscles had stiffened up some while he was asleep.
Something wrong?
Just an old injury. Nothing to worry about.
Yeah, I know all about those old injuries. The world's got a way of knocking folks around, doesn't it?
Sure does.
Well, sit down somewhere. Coffee will be ready soon. And then I'll whip up some breakfast.
You're the cook here, too?
That's right. Jack of all trades.
While Luke was sitting there, the two young cowboys came in from outside. They'd spent the night at the roadhouse, too, and Luke figured they'd been out to check on the horses, all of which had been put in the shed behind the building, along with the body of the gambler.
Hey, morning, Mr. Smith. Got something here for you.
He lifted a gun belt with double holsters, the walnut grip of a revolver stuck up from each holster.
We took him off the Gammon brothers when we dragged the carcasses outside last night. Didn't see any important arm in the wolves.
I see.
Luke took the gun belt from the first cowboy. The holsters were reversed for a cross draw. He slid one of the guns from leather and recognized it as a Remington. Fine weapon.
What about the other two brothers?
The cowboys grinned and pulled back their coats to reveal that they had taken the gun belts from those bodies, too.
Oh, those look like the best guns, so we figured you deserved to have them, Mr. Smith. And the horses, too, if you want them.
I'll take one horse as an extra mount. You fellas can get some good use out of the other two, I expect.
The punchers exchanged grins.
We sure can. We was just about broke last night, except for our saddles and our horses. Now we got good guns and extra mounts. Reckon we're plumb rich.
Luke wasn't sure he'd ever been as young and carefree as those two Texas cowboys. If he had been, he couldn't remember it. Marcy came over with the coffee pot.
You two sit down. Breakfast will be ready in a bit.
They were all eating a short time later when the door opened again. Luke glanced up and saw a bulky figure silhouetted against the gray light of the overcast day. The first things he noticed were the rifle in the man's hand and the tin star pinned to his coat. He recognized it as a United States Marshal's badge. The man wore a thick sheepskin coat and had a broad-brimmed brown hat pulled down tight on his head so the wind wouldn't blow it away. His face was red, either from the cold, a close acquaintance with whiskey, or both, and a close-cropped blonde beard stuck out on his cheeks and chin.
Good morning. Mighty chilly out there to go with that dust and the snow.
We have coffee if you want it, Marshal. And grub.
The lawman slapped gloved hands together to warm them and grinned.
That sounds fine, ma'am. Nothing like hot food and drink to warm a man up.
Marcy stood and motioned with her head toward one of the empty tables.
Have a seat. I'll get you a cup and a plate.
Much obliged.
The marshal went over to the table, set his rifle on it, pulled off his gloves, and dropped his hat next to them. He smiled at Luke and the two cowboys.
Morning, gents.
Good morning, Marshal.
Deputy Marshal. Name's Jasper Thornapple.
I'm Luke Smith.
Thornapple didn't seem to recognize the name, but that didn't mean anything. Maybe he was just good at covering up his reactions.
Teddy Young.
Bert Tuttle.
Pleased to meet you.
Marcy set a cup of steaming coffee in front of Thornapple.
What brings you out here in the middle of nowhere, Marshal?
Well, I'm trailing some men. Cooter, Ben, and Carl Gammon. Reckon you've probably heard of them.
I sure have.
Marcy went back and sat down next to Luke.
Or rather, I should say I was trailing them. Came across a wolf pack about a mile east of here, having themselves a feast and a dry wash. There wasn't much left of the fellas they'd been after, but I'm pretty sure one of them was Cooter Gammon. He had a streak of white in his hair, hard to miss. Since there was two men about the same size with him, I feel confident my boss can close the books on the Gammon brothers.
Bad luck for them, being caught by a pack of wolves like that.
Thornapple took a sip of his coffee and nodded.
Especially when those wolves was carrying guns.
The two cowboys couldn't stop themselves from flinching guiltily. Luke's face was like stone, though.
What do you mean by that?
I mean one of those skulls had a bullet hole smack dab in the middle of its face. Somebody shot that Gammon brother before the wolves got at him. A well-deserved fate, I might add. You folks have anything you want to tell me? Bear in mind, I'm a federal lawman who doesn't cotton to being lied to.
Mr. Smith didn't have any choice. He didn't have any choice at all. Those Gammons were worse than hydrophobia skunks. They were going to kill us all.
As soon as the words stopped tumbling out of the youngster's mouth, he turned a stricken face to Luke.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Smith. I shouldn't have said nothing.
That's all right. I have a feeling Marshal Thornapple already had a pretty good idea what happened. He strikes me as a man who's been to see the elephant.
There and back again. You killed all three of them, Mr. Smith?
Two of them, anyway, and I contributed to the third.
I cut his throat. He probably would have died anyway, but I didn't see any harm in hurrying him along to hell.
Nor would I, ma'am. In that case, I suppose the two of you will have to come to some sort of equitable arrangement concerning the division of the reward money.
Reward money?
That's right, ma'am. Each of the Gammons had a $1,000 bounty on his head.
Marcy leaned back in her chair, her eyes wide with amazement.
$3,000?
That's right. Come with me to Wichita, and I'll authorize the payment you can collect from the bank there.
My God, we're rich! I never saw $3,000 in my life!
Luke hesitated to say anything. He didn't fully trust Thornapple. Maybe the lawman was trying to nick him into going along to Wichita, where he would promptly place him under arrest. Giving it more thought, that didn't seem likely. Luke could tell by looking at Thornapple the badge toter had plenty of bark on him. If Thornapple wanted to make an arrest, he'd just do it instead of trying some fancy trick. More than likely, Thornapple had never seen any of the wanted posters charging Luke with murder that had circulated back in Georgia.
There's just one thing. I'm not a bounty hunter.
You killed three men with a price on their heads. It's not like you have to file papers ahead of time or anything. That money is yours by rights, Mr. Smith.
We've got to do it, Luke. We've got to claim that reward.
He understood then how much it meant to her. She had spent her life struggling just to get by, enduring hardship and degradation. The tough times were starting to take a real toll on her. Yet there was still a spark of dignity inside her, and a sense of determination that might allow her to make something better of her life if she just got the chance. The bounty money could give her that chance.
All right, we'll go to Wichita with the marshal.
She threw her arms around his neck.
Oh, thank you, Luke. You don't know what this means to me.
Thornapple nodded toward the holstered Remingtons and coiled shell belts still lying on the table where Luke and Marcy sat.
Whew, nice looking guns. Whose are they?
They're mine.